Hi, this is Tony at Cover Magazine. I'm speaking to Spiros Fatouras, the CEO of Marsh McLennan South Africa. Spiros, thank you very much for your time and for chatting to me today.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for inviting us to your show.
Thank you. Thank you also for sharing with me the Global Risk Report 2024. There was some very, very interesting information in there. I think one of the things that I especially liked was the fact that there's sort of comments on the next 5 years and the next 10 years and sort of a feel for both. And that helps quite a bit to get some perspective as to how these things develop and so on. So maybe just to start off with, Spiros, if you can just give me an idea a little bit for the audience sake, background to the report and what the purpose of this is.
All right, perfect, Tony. So thank you. So The Global Risks Report 2024 edition is now in its 19th year. The report is produced by the World Economic Forum in preparation for the meetings that happen in Davos in the beginning of the year. The report is produced in partnership with Marsh & McLennan and the Zurich Insurance Group. And the report really presents the findings from a global risks perception survey, which captures insights from over 1,500 global experts. And really, as you've highlighted, looks to ranking various risks globally from an economic, environmental, geopolitical, societal, and technological perspective, and really looks at three time frames. It looks at 2024, it looks at the next 2 years, and it looks out to the next 10 years. And it sees how these risks rank and how these risks interconnect with each other. I think the real purpose of the report is to give a future-looking outlook for business leaders, organizations, political leaders, to help and identify some of the key critical risks facing the globe and almost try and path a way to solutions.
Mm-hmm. And just getting to the meat of the thing, what were the top risks that were identified and how did they develop?
So the top risks identified in 2024, Tony, sort of the first risk is extreme weather, which really talks to, what we're seeing globally from a weather, from different weather conditions. If you think about El Nino, and the effect that it's had, and that the Northern Hemisphere last year has had the hottest temperature in recorded history. So that was the number one risk. Coming in at number two is sort of technology-generated misinformation and disinformation. So this is really around the sort of proliferation of new technologies that can create misinformation and disinformation on large scale, and what that means for society, for politics, for the media, in terms of being able to distinguish the truth. Third, for the top risks in 2024 is society and political polarization. Fourth is cost of living crisis that really continues to talk around sort of some of the supply side pricing pressures that we continue to see, really stemming from El Nino, escalation of various conflicts that we've seen around the world, and particularly if inflation remains high for a few more years, what is that going to mean in terms of debt indebtedness for smaller businesses and smaller countries? And then finally, top five is cybersecurity, which has been in the top five for many years now, and that just really talks to the ability of companies and governments and countries to protect against cyber risks. That's, Tony, that's in 2024. It changes marginally as you look into the next 2 years. So as you look into the next 2 years, AI misinformation and disinformation becomes number one. So interestingly, when you look at the global survey and you look from the next 2 years to the next 10 years, 2024 doesn't paint a pretty picture, but it gets worse as you move out. So I think in 2024, only 16% of the respondents thought there'd be a stable or calm outlook in the next 2 years, with 54% reporting some instability or moderate risk of a sort of global catastrophe. And if you look at a 10-year outlook, less than 10% of respondents expect stability or calm, with over 63% expecting elevated risk or upheaval. So that really talks to how the picture worsens over the next 10-year horizon. So misinformation, disinformation comes to number one. Extreme weather events is number two. Societal polarization stays at number three. Cyber insecurity moves up to number four. And then interstate armed conflict comes in at number five. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that this survey was done in September 2023, prior to the outbreak of the current conflict in the Middle East. So that would probably be a bit higher.
Yeah.
And then finally, as you look to the 10-year horizon, predominantly dominated by extreme weather events. So the first four risks are all weather-related. So weather events, changing to the Earth climate systems, biodiversity, natural resource shortages, and then number five is misinformation and disinformation. So kind of that's how it shifts our tone in terms of 2024, the next 2 years, and the next 10 years.
Yeah. And if I can make sort of the conclusion, the fact that those weather-related risks move up to the top four doesn't mean that the other risks have reduced. It's more probably a reflection on those climate risks increasing that we have that sort of shift.
Potentially. I mean, again, I think human nature, the further away you look at risks, you know, the more you minimize the impact. But I do think that most respondents have realized that, you know, weather is a serious issue for the global world. And I think that's predominantly why they stay in the top five consistently. And that's not just a 2024 position. I think it's been that way probably for the last 3 to 5 years. Extreme weather has been in the top five for a extended period of time.
Yeah. And maybe just if I could ask then about and just moving to a sort of fallout of those risks. And business interruption is a big thing. And we've seen during the COVID period, but also through the sort of regional conflicts, how business interruption can sort of impact economies, not just local, although local has been impacted quite heavily by business interruption. Weather-related events, and especially those risks growing. As an industry, how do we deal with that from a business interruption perspective? How do we counter that expected fallout that is going to increase significantly over the next 5 to 10 years then?
That's a difficult question to answer, Tony. I mean, if you go through the report, you really understand how the risks are interconnected. And I really encourage your viewers to either go to the World Economic Forum website, to go to www.marsh.com, or to go to www.marshmclennan.com and download the report. It's quite a significant report, but everything is interconnected. So if you think about the current challenges that are facing the world, the issue around misinformation and disinformation is probably very critical in the next year or two, because interestingly, in the next 2 years, close to 3 billion people will be testing democracy and going through elections. Over 50 countries are going to have democratic elections in the next 2 years. And these include countries like the US, like the UK, countries like Taiwan, obviously South Africa, probably the most important election we're going to have in the last country's 30-year history, the European Union. So there's a lot happening from a political perspective in the next 2 years, and how misinformation and disinformation impacts that, I think, is going to be very, very interesting. And then you overlay, you overlay the cost of living crisis, and you really have this challenge that many countries and companies are facing around managing the short-term exposures where they are at the moment, versus the long-term issues that are facing the world, which is climate. And it's how do you, you know, give up one now and focus on climate in the longer run? So, you know, I think to solve climate has to be done on a global stage. It has to be done with global multilateral agreements. It has to be done with public sector. It has to be done with private sector. I think the insurance industry has a key role to play in terms of understanding its role in society, understanding its voice that it can bring on the global stage in terms of how to, A, highlight the risk, B, pose solutions to try enter into public-private partnerships, work with government, create various pools that we've done in many parts of the world. I think the industry has to be proactive in looking to, you know, create solutions for what is a global problem. You know, this is not something the industry can simply ensure. You know, I think, you know, if we're not proactive and it's not done with global coordination, you know, I fear that, you know, potentially ultimately the risk will become too large for the insurance industry to bear. Because effectively you're talking about a global catastrophe. You know, if again, if you read through the report, they're saying the next up to 2030, we could reach a tipping point or an inflection point where the world increases temperature by 1.5 degrees Celsius. And you know, can we come back from that? So the issue with weather is that I think the scale of interventions that are required and the pace of those interventions, the report highlights there's a disconnect in terms of what we're doing globally versus what is required.
Yeah.
And I think the industry needs to try and play a role to accelerate awareness, intervention, investment, whatever it can do to this global problem.
Yeah, because a lot of that is driven by sort of localized agendas instead of looking at it from a global perspective and trying to solve the problem that way. Just on the side then, are there any of those sort of uninsurable risks that you foresee in South Africa? Because we've seen an uptick in natural catastrophes in this country.
Yeah, I mean, the industry is dynamic. I think the industry is responds quickly to a dynamic changing risk landscape. So again, I think if we saw how the industry responded post-COVID, you know, there were many policies out there that provided non-damage, you know, sort of contingent business interruption cover to some of its customers post-COVID. Some clients didn't have their protection, some clients did. You know, I think the industry looked at that cost and looked to put in a lot of exclusions. I think as the risk landscape changes, Tony, I think it is, you know, it becomes almost the initial reaction, you know, for any company, whether it's an insurance company or not. You know, if you suffer an unintended loss, you know, you look to try and mitigate yourself from that loss in the simplest way. And we often see that with insurance companies and the local industries bringing in exclusionary wording.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, the industry has to become part of the solution. You know, we have to, you know, Marsh as an insurance intermediary and many other broken businesses will always fundamentally be the voice of the client, will always fundamentally be focused on driving and looking for solutions. And ultimately, you know, I think the industry and the underwriters that adopt that mindset will benefit in the long run. The country will benefit in the long run. The economy will benefit in the long run. And ultimately, if you talk about some of these global challenges, you know, we'll hopefully look to find solutions for those global challenges. I mean, the report talks to coordination, collaboration, which we've touched on. But the other thing is driving and looking for innovative solutions, you know, looking for groundbreaking research and development. Yes, and I think it talks to that within the context of, let's say, if you think about environmental issues, but a similar mentality can be applied to the industry, can be applied to insurance intermediaries. You know, we need to be challenging ourselves to look for those breakthrough innovative solutions that can ultimately help, you know, the companies, the customers, and society.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That's always been the solution. In the industry, as a collective, come up with those sort of innovative things, like parametric insurance, as an example, has helped us quite a bit. Spiros, there's an interesting one there that I didn't expect, but to be mentioned in the report, and that was the societal polarization. Although we do have been seeing it over the last few years, quite big, America being a very good example, but this is also happening in the EU in many areas. Maybe you can just explain to us how come this ended up and what is the fallout risk from that?
All right. So, Tony, I think, you know, societal polarization, interestingly, and economic downturn are sort of the two risks that the report sees as the most interconnected, and obviously then potentially the ones that could have the most severe consequence. So, I mean, really societal and political polarization really talks to, you know, the difference between sort of the global South and the global North. It talks about the lack of economic opportunities for different people in society. It talks about the different standards of living amongst different people in society. And again, I think coming back to the point earlier, if you think about, you know, AI disinformation and misinformation, the spread of technological advancement, the proliferation of AI, you know, the risk of having technological haves and have-nots will also potentially drive that societal polarization. As technology shifts to different parts of the globe, and as you start creating sort of a different social agenda, which might be fabricated or also just really have, you know, synthetic content. So, and obviously the harder you have economic, the more you have economic hardship, the more it's going to create sort of that polarization in society. And I guess ultimately the biggest risk is then, you know, in having that polar society, it talks to instability from a society perspective, it talks to instability from an economic perspective, and it particularly talks to then, you know, how do you manage that instability within a country?
Mm-hmm. And then just in closing, Spiros, we've now gone through quite a few of those risks where, you know, you mentioned that it's very important that there's collaboration within the insurance industry and a lot more discussions, not just locally, but also globally. How do you feel about the efforts that are being put in as a collective to try and come up with solutions to this? Do you think that the industry is doing enough? Do you think that there should be a bit of a ramp up if you look at it locally versus globally?
It's a good question. I mean, as I said right in the beginning, I mean, the report, you know, takes the view of some 1,400, 1,500 global risk experts around the world and really paints the picture we see. There's no doubt that solutions going forward will be required to be done at a local level and at a global level, at an individual level and at a company level, at a private level and a public sector level. You know, I think it becomes, it's quite difficult to paint a silver bullet in terms of the solutions that are needed, given all the risks that have been highlighted. So there's definitely focus on individual effort and sort of joint effort is key. You know, has the industry done enough locally? Has the industry done enough globally? Has the world done enough? And I think you look at the report and it highlights areas that we could do better. You know, I don't want to sit here in judgment of any particular country or any particular industry. But if you just look at the risks that have been highlighted, the concerns that come out if we don't address some of those risks, I think it's fair to say that there's a lot more work that needs to get done globally, locally, individually, and collaboratively to try and address some of these challenges.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Spiros, that was a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for the time. I know you're very busy, and to share your thoughts with our audience.
Thank you, Tony. And then again, just for your audience, I mean, if they want to download the report, www.mmc.com, they can go there and get the report. It's available for download to the public.
Thank you very much. We will also make sure that it's included in what we share. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.